traveling the state of Wisconsin, I find repeatedly I get asked the same, I get talked to about the same two things as I'm listening to folks around our state. One thing that I hear is that people are fed up right to here with excessive government spending. And the second thing, virtually everybody asks me all over the state of Wisconsin, is what's the difference between you and Scott Walker? So today I'm here to address both of those issues and to talk through a little more detail about them. I'd like to start by thanking Citizens Against Government Waste, an independent third party who has verified our fiscal conservative principles with the release they came out with yesterday. We appreciate their reiterating that when I was in Congress that I was a budget hawk controlling government spending. And today I'd like to talk about my opponents in this race and talk specifically about where they're at. Because when I got into this race a year ago, I understood that the spending practices of Jim Doyle had hurt our state and destroyed our economy by driving taxes up and jobs out of the state of Wisconsin. I will admit that I was surprised to learn that when I studied the Milwaukee County budget, that the proposed spending by Scott Walker actually increased spending faster than Jim Doyle. In fact, under the Scott Walker proposed budgets, spending went up 35% over the same 8-year period of time that spending under Jim Doyle's proposed budgets went up 27%. Now, I want to be very, very clear on this. We are not talking about county approved budgets, or we're not talking about state legislature adjusted budgets. These are the budgets that Scott Walker himself proposed out of his office over the 8 fiscal years that he's presented budgets to the county, and the same 8 fiscal years, offset only because of the fiscal year differential, but the same 8-year fiscal year presentation from Jim Doyle. And again, when I learned that in Milwaukee County, the spending rate of increase was actually almost 1/3 faster than the devastating excessive spending of Governor Jim Doyle, I knew I was in the right race, the race for governor. I knew I would represent the conservative principles and values of smaller government, less spending, lower taxes, and more personal responsibility. I brought with me just documentation so that I could actually talk about the numbers that are involved here, and you all have a good handle on where I'm getting these numbers from. On this chart, I have the first fiscal year that Scott Walker proposed a budget in Milwaukee County. His budget was for $1.1 billion at that point in time. His last fiscal year, 2010, is $1.481 billion. That is a 35% increase in spending over that period of time. And I point out that we're looking at the same fiscal years here for Governor Jim Doyle. And his first one was $24 billion. His last one was $31 billion, a 27% increase. The numbers that I have on this chart, do you have those papers? Doc, can I have those papers, please? The numbers I have on this chart, just so it's completely understandable and people can find them, they're in the Milwaukee County budget. It is public record, available to anyone. And if you go into the Milwaukee County budget for each of the years that Scott Walker was in office, you will find a page in the budget that actually talks about total spending. And you can pick up the numbers that are on this chart very easily. And you will find that over the course of these 8-year fiscal year budgets, that in fact Scott Walker's spending went up 35% compared to Jim Doyle's 27% over the same 8 fiscal years. At the end of the day, it's these numbers that got me and kept me in the governor's race. And it's an understanding that spending went up in Milwaukee County under Scott Walker's proposals 1/3 faster, or virtually 1/3 faster than state spending went up. I understood when I got into the race that the devastating increases in spending under Jim Doyle had destroyed our economy in Wisconsin. I will admit I was surprised to learn that it was even worse in Milwaukee County under Scott Walker. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
Sure, for a second. That state spending, it looks like it's GPR rather than all funds spending, is that correct?
It's budget appropriated. These numbers, this is appropriated numbers from Doyle, is that what you're looking for? It's total. It's a total appropriated numbers for Doyle. Yes. If you go into his budgets, you will find that they normally show all of us the 2-year numbers, but if you actually go into the budgets themselves, you'll find that they are broke down fiscal year by fiscal year. So I actually went into the budgets, and this 2-year total is probably what you're used to seeing, or this 2-year total is what you're used to seeing. All funds. It's not the levy. It's all funds. And it's on the spending. I want to be very clear there. That's a very important differential. This is on the spending side. These numbers are on the spending side.
What's the single biggest waste of money in the state of Wisconsin right now?
You know, that's an across-the-board question that has to be answered. And to start on a particular item is going to mean we're going to talk about a tiny part of the budget as opposed to the big problem in the state of Wisconsin. Here, the heart and soul of what's wrong in the state of Wisconsin is in this picture. Our government has tried to fix the problems facing Wisconsin by raising spending, and that does not work. What they needed to do was control spending so they could cut taxes, and they would stimulate the economy by allowing people to keep more of their own money. When I was in Congress in the 90s, that's exactly what we did. We cut taxes, it allowed people to keep more of their own money, and our economy boomed. These guys have tried the exact opposite of that, and it has not worked, as is demonstrated by the loss of over 100,000 jobs in Wisconsin.
But you must have an idea. I mean, you must have some things on there that you hate, and you think would, you know, if you were governor, you'd kill them right away.
I would place across the board, department by department, spending restrictions in place, and would require every department head to bring us a budget proposal that reduces the size and scope of government by 1% annually in real dollar terms. That is to say, and if you go to our website, you will find this all laid out in detail, that we would actually allow spending increases not more than 1% less than the rate of inflation, which is a real reduction in the size and scope of government by 1% per year. Now, we will do better than that, but I'm willing to promise that. The one thing I've learned in business, when I talk to my banks, we underpromise and overperform, and it's the same type of thing here. We will overperform these numbers.
So you want that methodology to the Milwaukee County budget. What would have happened over those 8 years?
Can I apply it to the state budget instead to respond? I don't want to avoid your question. I did not do the math in the Milwaukee County. On the state budget, we would have $4 billion available today to use for tax cuts in the state of Wisconsin. That is to say, we would allow the people in the state to keep $4 billion more of their own money. They're only going to do one of two things when they do that. They're going to either save it or spend it, either of which would totally stimulate the economy here in Wisconsin. This is why I'm in the race. If these guys had applied the plan that we have laid out at our website, the budget plan that we are proposing, we would have $4 billion available for tax cuts this year, and we would not have the budget mess that we're currently looking at.
What's the percentage increase?
Sorry?
What's the percentage? The equivalent to the 27 and 35% under your plan would have been how much up over 8 years?
I'll post on my website. I've got a number in my head, and I don't want to give it to you because it may be wrong. I will post it on our website, though, so you guys can see it. It's if I give you the number and I'm off a percent or two, are you going to be all right? It's about eight. It's about eight. About eight, yeah.
How can we cut spending when, you know, healthcare goes up 15% a year, fuel rates go up, you know, basically every expense in the economy increases at least at the rate of inflation?
I'm glad you asked that, because when I went to Washington, D.C., and the year was 1995, and everybody was asking me the same question. In fact, and again, if you go to our website, we have these quotes posted there. I got called the kid that fell off the turnip truck because I was saying the same things that I'm saying now back there in Washington, D.C. In my first year in office, we prepared this book. It was 1995, and we showed how to balance the budget by the year 1999. We laid out number by number, line by line, what had to be done in order to balance the budget. We even went the next step and showed how to pay off the federal debt. And a lot of people laughed initially. And then we started carrying out what was in this, the vision that was in this book. Not line by line, but the vision that was in this book was carried out. Eventually, I got kicked off a committee because we were fighting so hard to control spending. But over the years I was there, people figured out what we were saying worked. And they joined us in this battle, and we actually got the budget balanced. So when you're asking me these questions, I accept the skepticism. I've dealt with this before. I also know that when we fought our way through these battles, at the end of the day, 4 years into this thing, the budget was balanced, we had passed the biggest tax cut in American history, and our economy was restored. When I look at this, I keep looking at this chart going, the heart and soul of what's wrong in Wisconsin and in America today is that these guys have tried to fix the problem by raising spending, as opposed to doing what we did back then, which was controlling spending so we could cut taxes and let people keep more of their own money. So I've been there before, we've dealt with this before, and we've gotten through it. It happened, it worked. I just go a step further. When the recession hit the home building industry in our small businesses, we met with the same type of skepticism at our banks saying, how are you guys going to survive through this stuff? But if you're a small business owner, you have to figure out how to survive, and you have to make things work. There's nowhere else to go. The buck stops on your desk. So
what would you cut today to the 8% to the 27%?
You're asking a question that takes 100 pages to answer. Three examples of what we would cut. First department would come in, instead of raising spending by 8%, we'd ask them to be 1% under the rate of inflation, and they would bring me their budget proposal specifically at 1% under the rate of inflation, or we would simply replace the people. It's that simple. So again, I'm not going to go into specifics, because if we do, that's all we're going to talk about. I am going to talk about big pictures and how to balance a budget. I've been there before. We know how to do it. It's across the board, department by department, and you adjust those levels. And I haven't said this yet, and this is important. When you've got the across-the-board spending proposals on your desk and you're looking at them, there are going to be some areas that require spending increases greater than 1% less than the rate of inflation. You pointed out healthcare, for example. There are going to be those areas. That's when you go looking for spending cuts. So when you have to increase an area more than the permitted amount, that's where you find a different program that's not working and specifically start looking to eliminate other items. Now, what we did in D.C. and the way we got this done, we did not propose spending cuts specifically to reach our targets, but we proposed a variety of spending cuts that exceeded our targets so that then the members of Congress could debate which ones they wanted to do and which ones they didn't want to do. So if we needed, for example, spending was scheduled to be $100 billion in an area and it had to be $99 billion next year, we would have had $2 or $3 billion of spending reductions in the plan as opposed to the one that was needed. And that allowed people then to debate it back and forth.
Trying to keep school spending at close to two-thirds, would you have allocated less money for schools so they had a lower overall spending, or would you have been committed to something in the neighborhood of two-thirds?
You're into a very specific question as it comes to education, and I'd prefer to answer that in a specific discussion on education. I'm going to stay at the 30,000-foot view here and just say that they, like everybody else, would need to come in with budget proposals at least 1% under the rate of inflation. But having said that, let me also say we will be addressing specifically education in the not-distant future. And I will provide you with very specific answers to what you're asking.
But would your 1% under inflation apply to schools?
It would apply to everything across the board, subject to adjustments after the fact where we make reprioritizing possible.
So you want to say if you reprioritize school spending or kept it to 1% below inflation?
I want to answer that question for you, but I want to answer it in a setting where that is what we're talking about is education. So I'm not giving you a hard time about it or anything, but I would like to answer that in a big picture setting about education so we can discuss it in its entirety. Let me walk you through the essence of what you're asking me. When you look at public school funding in the state of Wisconsin, you have to ask yourself, where is the money going to? And how much of the money is actually getting to the classroom versus how much is being spent to comply with Madison rules, regulations, red tape, reports, etc. So when you start going down this road, it's not just a discussion about how much money you're going to spend on education, but it's about what you're going to do about education to allow us to deliver a higher quality education at a more cost-effective manner. I have already talked to one superintendent of schools that has verified for me that in his opinion, if Madison got out of the way, that the only thing Madison was doing is verifying the academic growth of their students one year to the next, that was all Madison's role was in education, he thought he could reduce his spending in his district by 25%. So we're going to be going into what the cost savings are in education, how you provide a higher quality education to our kids. Remember, my background is education. I have an undergraduate degree in math education. I have a master's degree in supervision, instructional leadership. I've taught in the public schools. I've taught in the UW system. I've taught at a private college. I chaired the finance committee. I was on the executive committee on the Board of Regents at another private college in the state. And we currently co-chair three schools in Milwaukee and a school in Phoenix, Arizona under a 501c3 with nearly 1,000 students in our school system. And we're running those schools at some places around 60% compared to the corresponding public schools in the same locations. So I've got a fairly strong background in this particular area and look forward to bringing you very specific answers to what you're asking.
Speaking of those, there was a report that some of the company educational organizations you're involved with receive stimulus dollars.
Yes.
Do
yes.
those stimulus dollars help that effort?
Actually, they don't help that effort. To be very specific about what happened there is the state of Arizona has a contract with our schools to supply a set amount of money. And in Arizona, they substituted stimulus money in for their budget money. So the schools did not get extra money because of the stimulus. the stimulus money was used to plug a budget hole out in Arizona, and the contract amount from day one to the end was the same.
Wasn't plugging that hole beneficial though?
If you're saying versus taking the money away from the schools.
Well,
you're asking now whether or not they would have taken the money from someplace else or taken it from our schools. The bottom line is this, you guys. I run a business. I'm in the private sector. The government set these rules. They signed a contract with our schools to deliver a certain amount of money, and they decided how they're going to deliver the money.
What was the superintendent's name, the one you talked to about the 25%?
I'm going to have to ask him if he'll allow me to release that. I will at least deliver the email that he sent to me, if you'd like. His numbers, by the way, are 12,500 per student down to 9,000 was his answer. So it was actually a tad over 25%.
Push comes to shove. I mean, if your budget director says, look, we're going to have to slash services in order to make your 1% cut, are you okay with that?
You guys, I'm a small business owner. This whole conversation that we're having is so far-fetched for a small business owner. We had to reduce our cost by 15%. When we're standing here talking about can we improve the efficiencies of government by $1 for every $100 they spend, the vast majority of the business owners across the state are going to laugh at us for having this conversation. We can do far better than that while we still provide the goods and services that are necessary in this state. Look, this is spending increases far in excess of the rate of inflation over the last 8 years. These guys tried to fix our state by spending more money, and it does not work. The outcome is our economy is in shambles, and it's about time we turn this thing around. I am in the race for governor because somebody needs to bring conservative principles to the governor's race, and conservative principles meaning smaller government, less spending, lower taxes, and more personal responsibility, and these records do not indicate that's going to happen.
So no cuts, sounds like.
Across the...
You don't need to make any cuts in services at all.
To get to 1%, okay. If you're asking me as a small business owner, do I think I will make any cuts in services to get to a 1%?
You as governor, do you have a 1%?
Yeah, I'm bringing my background with this, okay? Yeah. From the experience that I have, can we find $1 in savings for every $100 the government spends without anybody in the state knowing that there's a difference in goods and services? Yes. Definitively, yes. If you're trying to pin me down on that, that's a good question.
We're in a heated primary here with Scott Walker. On the Democratic side, we don't see that kind of primary. Are you concerned that Barrett's able to stay in the background and then come out with guns blazing, whoever wins in September and win the whole contest?
The reality is that this race is pretty clearly defined in these numbers, and I'm really comfortable talking about numbers and defining the differences between us with these numbers. If the people of this state find this acceptable, and if this is what they want for their future, then I'm not going to get elected governor and I'm going back to my businesses. But if they think that we need a fiscal conservative who supports smaller government, less spending, then they're going to wind lower taxes, then they're going to wind up electing me to be a governor. And I get this debate, but the debate is not just between me and Scott Walker. The debate is between me and Scott Walker and Tom Barrett, and the debate should be heard out there in public, and it should be heard in the context and the framework of what is the vision for the future of the state of Wisconsin. And is it this and what this leads to? This is devastating. The loss of 150,000 jobs in the state of Wisconsin since this recession started, that's devastating for the state of Wisconsin. And they've got to answer that question. But there's not a clear line of distinction between all of the candidates in the race in any other area as much as right here in this area. They will be posted later this evening on our website. I'm hoping that what happens is the debate between Scott Walker and I makes it clear what our positions are on issues, so when we go into the fall, the folks have a clear-cut decision to make in their minds. I'm hoping that's what happens. I mean, you can't get much different. You can't get much different on the spending issues than what I'm laying out here, and it's numbers. It's not, you know, it's not personal or anything. Scott's a nice guy. It's the numbers, you guys, that don't work. Citizens Against Government Waste came out yesterday with that statement. They reconfirmed my conservative principles, fiscal conservative principles, as it relates to controlling spending and wasteful government spending. And I'm looking at these numbers. This doesn't work.
Why do you not have Barrett's numbers here now?
They'll be there tonight. They'll be available. I mean, honest answer to your question, I don't want to miss this distinction. Okay. Honest answer to your question, I don't want to miss this distinction. This distinction is too important.
One thing that's... I've been curious about it, and I know some other people I've talked to. This is the second time you've had a press conference in front of Governor Doyle's office. You include him in your charts. I'm just wondering, it almost seems, if I didn't know any better, I would think you were running against him in the fall.
Well, as it relates to these numbers, I will tell you that when we got into the race for governor, we thought Jim Doyle was running. So my understanding, and the reason I got in this race initially, is because I understood that a 27% spending increase over this period of time was devastating to Wisconsin because it caused higher taxes and the loss of jobs. I will admit I did not know this at the time, and I was more than a little surprised to find this information out as it relates to the Milwaukee County budget. So the bottom line in this whole thing, you guys, I'm in this race because of what's on this chart. This is the heart and soul of what I'm doing in the Republican primary and in the governor's race as a whole. This does not work, and it's devastating for the future of the state of Wisconsin. We have a different vision. It's a very different vision than this. And if allowed to implement that vision, things will be different in Wisconsin. I believe it will restore our economy.
And what's your thinking about having the press conferences here?
In this location?
Right in front of the governor's office.
Well, I'm not sure I even knew how to find it when I came here last week, to be honest with you. So I think it's an indication that we are in the governor's race, and it's a logical spot to hold them. Plus, it's convenient for all you guys.
Do you foresee any scenario
where you don't stay in the race all the way to the primary?
No.
Mark, how crucial is Republican control of the legislature for you to get this agenda through?
You know what? It's not control of the legislature. It's getting this agenda passed for the good of the future of the state of Wisconsin so we can restore our economy. A Republican legislature, a Democrat, when I was in Washington, when we did this and got the budget balance and cut taxes, that was a Democrat president, a Republican House, and a Republican Senate. It was bipartisan then, and it would have to be now as well. I would hope that as we put these plans out there and people see how far down the state of Wisconsin has come, and we lay out logical plans that are very different, a very different vision than what we've been having, that we would get bipartisan support for it, even if we have a Republican legislature. So I'd look for bipartisan support either way.